Warning. My dad and Matt say bad words in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Get on with it.
Yes, get over it. Yeah!
What does it take to get you into the, I mean, you're a pretty frequent moviegoer, but what gets you excited to go into a movie?
Nothing. I'm dead inside. I'll tell you one thing that does get me excited to go into a theater, and that's George Miller. And I went to 3,000 Years of Longing.
Right on. Well, Mr. Matt Foster and myself, Trevor Trujillo, talking about some of the things we've seen recently. Matt, I tried like hell to get to 3,000 Years of Longing. I thought I was going to have a ticket, and it turned out they were selling advance tickets and the movie wasn't out yet. And I have unfortunately missed my chance since then. I'm really excited for this one. We really were big fans of George Miller. We loved Mad Max Fury Road. It was the very first episode of the Nighthawks podcast. Matt, tell me about this. Is this one with Idris Elba, and is it Tilda Swinton that's in this? Or
Yeah.
It's based on a modern-day fairy tale. But tell me about this one, Matt.
It's hard to talk about without getting spoilish. But it is about a... You know, it's a genie in a lamp story. Idris Elba is the djinn. No other name given. Tilda Swinton's character, I believe her name's Althea, finds the lamp in a bazaar, you know, takes it back to... She's a famous author and professor at the end of her career. And she takes it back to her hotel room after having picked it up in a bazaar on a shopping trip during a conference. And she sets the genie free, et cetera, et cetera, to sort of distract the genie while she thinks of a good wish, because she's like a folklore professor and she doesn't want to, like, she knows that like all genie wishes end in monkey's paws. And while she thinks of a resolution to the notion that she must wish, or essentially he threatens to follow her around and wait for her to be like, I wish that guy would die and grant it, because she doesn't, at first she's just not going to wish, right? She's like, nope.
My name is Althea. My story is true. I am a solitary creature by nature. I have no children, no siblings, no parents. I did once have a husband. If there is fate, who can say? But in the Grand Bazaar of Istanbul, I chose a memento. It. Whatever it is, I'm sure it has an interesting story.
So, what will you wish for?
What is your heart's desire?
I do have a question. What does one do with three wishes?
You'll see.
There's no story about wishing that is not a cautionary tale.
We all have desires, even if they remain hidden from us. But it is your story, and I cannot wait to see where it goes.
Oh, how it might end.
And she's like, I've got money. I've been in love before. You know, I'm good. Material needs are met. I'm not putting my foot in this bear trap, right? And so he's kind of like, well, I kind of need you to wish. You gotta use this wish. I really need out of this bottle. You know. So I'm just gonna, you're gonna wish. Eventually the words are gonna come out of your mouth, you know? And so to distract him, she pulls the old flattery. She's like, oh, you must have seen so much history and so much of the world and stuff, and could you tell? And so it's like a backwards Arabian Nights conceit, where the long lived immortal being spins the tales for the human. And it's interesting. It's like sort of a braided anthology, but not really. Like, they're pretty closely connected and they all feature him. And they're all visually neat. It reminded me of what's the guy's name? Did the Cell, Tarsim Singh. It's on that level, like especially the furthest back one that involves the Queen of Sheba. It's very cool visuals, very intriguing little intimate, magically real story, like a modern magical realism thing, and it throws a couple curveballs at you. It's kind of neat. Very unlike the other George Miller movies.
It's not like Babe Pig in the City.
It's a little bit like Babe Pig in the City, but it's worth your time.
I was going to say, so like, if I'm going in expecting to have another theatrical renaissance like I did with Mad Max Fury Road, am I going to be disappointed?
If you're looking for that level, like, it can't possibly bring that energy, right?
Right.
But it's pretty good on the whole. It is pretty bizarre. Might be a good movie to watch on a trip to Colorado. If you get my drift out there in podcast land.
Well, that is a colloquial reference to a substance that we sometimes indulge in when in Colorado. But that is a hell of a segue, Matt, because I have also caught some theatrical movies. And as a matter of fact, one of these I want to report back to you. I think you've seen this one, too. But I made my first trip back to an Alamo Draft House for the first time since 2016. We were down in Denver. We've mentioned on the show before that my little guy is in Denver frequently and has been going through some health problems. And my partner has let me go on a couple of nights where after I've tucked them into bed, I can race across town and catch a late show at the Alamo Draft House. My first trip back to the Alamo Draft House was in Denver, and it was watching a movie that takes place in Denver. I caught The Black Phone, which is the new movie adapted from a short story by Joe Hill and brought to the screen by the wonderful team of Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill. C. Robert Cargill, a friend of the show. You can hear his interview with us among many, many other talented people on our 100th episode. But I got to see this neat little horror movie, which I think is now streaming on Peacock if folks are interested. But man, this was just a great breath of fresh air. It was a great movie to go back to the Draft House on. And it was not filmed in Denver, unfortunately. But it was just this fun piece of kismet that I went in and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go in. I'm going to see Cargill's movie. I've been waiting for this for a while. What a place to see it at the Alamo Draft House. And as I was buying my ticket, I thought I'd do a little name dropping. And I'm like, yeah, a buddy of mine wrote this movie. And the girl's like, oh, really? Well, it takes place in Denver. And so it was a fun little interaction I had with the Alamo Draft House staff. I had a drink while I was watching the movie, and boy, was this just a fun... Well, that's a weird way to put it. I had fun watching this, but this is definitely a horror movie. The protagonist is a kid, and that kid is in some dire jeopardy. The stakes are very high in this movie, but it is just a good, original, fun time at the movies at a scary movie. Ethan Hawke is terrifying, and his character has an iconic look. There's a mask that he wears that has some interchangeable pieces that make the mask make different facial expressions. And it also makes good use of helium balloons, and I have developed the theory that the helium balloon industry must have really pissed off Hollywood. After Child's Play, for instance, sales of My Buddy Dolls dropped like lead. Between the two It movies and The Black Phone, I think we're going to see more balloons flying around Halloween than we are for some birthday parties. Makes some great use of balloon imagery in this movie. Did you catch this one, Matt?
Yeah, I did. It's a fun one. Again, not fun, but fun.
Yeah, and it manages to avoid the trope of... It hangs the action on a pair of leads, and even the ensemble members are all child actors, and none of them are obnoxious, which is great. Hollywood just can't seem to nail that one down sometimes. We were talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi. The actress who played Leia in that series really had to grow on me. She finally got there by the end, but that was an uphill battle for me for a little bit. Not so in The Black Phone. This is a really taut, scary... fun time at the movies, and I highly recommend it. It's hard to talk about because I don't want to go into spoiler territory. But the thrust of it is basically a young man coping with the fact that he is the victim of a kidnapping serial killer, and he manages to find a unique way to troubleshoot his situation, develop a strategy to get himself out.
Well, that's actually, that's what I liked about this is the direction it goes. It is more fable. It has that old feel like we've talked about before, where there's an actual sort of consistent mythology in play, and it goes somewhere interesting, and it tells the story well with moderated and sensible exposition. You know, they find a great way to show a lot and not end up accidentally telling, you know. And I thought, I was talking about this with friend of the show, Nicholas Don Smith.
God bless Nicholas Don Smith. Hail Satan.
His commission books are open if you would like custom D&D character art or a children's book illustrated or anything like that.
Which he has done.
Get a hold of him. Yes, it is. He co-authored a book called Clarence Makes a Friend, and it's quite lovely. About a pigeon, little guy. He's quite heartwarming. But Nick and I were talking after watching The Black Phone that it manages to be spooky and upsetting in vast disproportion to how graphic it actually isn't. And it's because it has that Loctite, like, it feels like an urban legend. It feels like a story that kids tell to kids.
Right.
And that
comes into play in the movie too, like the lore that is spun around this situation and the way that kids communicate it to each other.
I'll be home in the morning.
Where are you going?
I'm staying over at Susie's tonight.
What's new? The flyer.
The papers call him the grabber.
I wish you wouldn't call him that.
You don't actually believe that story, do you? Because he can't hear you, and he doesn't really take kids that safe.
You goof. Well, isn't that just peachy keen?
You need some help?
You see that? Yeah. Would you hand me my hat? Yes, sir. I am a part-time magician.
Are those black balloons in there?
Would you like to see a magic trick?
I have an announcement to make. One of our students, Finney Blake, was abducted.
What if I could help the police find Finney?
Doesn't work. Not since I was a kid.
I'll scream. I'll scratch your face.
This face?
Daddy, I had a dream about it.
What happened in your dream?
He was taken.
By a man with black balloons?
Yes.
We never released those details.
Hello?
Don't hang up.
Who are you?
You know all our names?
You're getting out of here.
Please let the dreams be real.
See the wall in front of you? I tore a long cable loose from down there.
There's a combination lock on the inside of the storm door.
What's the combination?
I carved it in the wall.
Hang up the phone!
The tree, the door, the gate. I'd never seen it before except in my dream.
You don't have much time.
You're gonna use a weapon. You raise the phone, step back, and swing.
Look what you made me do.
Please hurry.
You remember what I told you?
That someday I should stand up for myself.
Someday is today, Finn.
I know it sounds like we're stumping for this guy who's been very gracious with his time to us, with a guy who has broken bread with us and slugged beers with us. You know, it's Safe to say we want to see our buddy succeed, but Cargill really knows what he's doing. These scripts that have his name on them, or even the scripts that don't have his name on them that he has written. He's written one recently under a pen name that was fantastic. It was a Ted Bundy movie with Elijah Wood. No Man of God, which is creepy on a whole other level. It's not a horror movie, but it is a horrific movie. It's a movie that is psychologically scary. And then you've got The Black Phone, which is also psychologically scary, but in a horror movie fashion. Cargill knows what he's doing, and I'm comfortable criticizing Cargill when some of his stuff does not land with me. Sinister 2 was not my favorite. But he was also a film critic for many years, so he knows that, you know, not everything is for everybody, and he takes that on the chin. This is not that situation. Cargill is in some, and Scott Derrickson to that end as well, are in some really prime storytelling times here. Like, these are fantastic films, and I think these guys are going to be big horror names in the years to come.
Yeah, they're finally going to be big horror names.
Speaking of big horror names, Matt, I have not caught Nope, but this is one I'm looking forward to. You have.
I was supposed to get a laugh because they're already big horror names. I set them, you spike them. That's how this works. Come on, man.
Sorry.
No, but I'm sorry. I also rejected your segue. We're off our rhythm tonight. But
it's an informal record.
I liked Nope. I liked Nope. Nope is pretty good.
Yeah, this is the new one from Jordan Peele, who gave us Get Out and Us. And this is, to everything that I've seen, which is not much, an alien invasion movie of some kind?
You need to go into Nope as cold as you can. I can only say sort of about anything involving it. It's a very aesthetic movie, and ultimately there's a certain simplicity to the ultimate reveal, but it profits through discovering it on your own. I will say that it's more accessible and more conventional than Us, but it's not quite as simple and linear.
Did you know that the very first assembly of photographs to create a motion picture was a 2-second clip of a black man on a horse? And that man is my great-great-grandfather.
Great.
There's another great-grandfather. But that's why back at the Haywood Ranch, as the only black-owned horse trainers in Hollywood, we like to say, since the moment pictures could move, yeah, skin in the game.
It's a bad miracle. They got a word for that.
Yeah.
It's a really hard movie to explain, because it's not that the spoilers come out of left field and spoil an intricate plot. It's that there would be any attempt to accurately reduce Nope to a logline fails to encapsulate its actual tone.
Let me ask you this then. Get Out and Them had some pretty strong social allegory. Is that present here?
Yeah, in a certain sense. It definitely is. There's actually some forgotten Hollywood lore in this that sort of speaks to that, but it's not. Us almost had the feeling that it was so allegorical, so on the nose, and wanted to be bad enough to sacrifice the linearity of what was actually going on. You got to roll with Us. It's not for that guy that's going to walk around and pick it apart. So what, is there just a giant basement under all of America? I don't understand that, you know? How would that work? How would they get enough oxygen? You know, it's clearly a fable. Or Nope is more grounded. It is much more in the world of Get Out. where it's essentially the real world, except this one thing goes awry. But yeah, there's some discussion. There's also just a tone of dread that's hard to explain without some allegory.
So busting out the granularity scale, where do you think you'd put it?
Oh, like a 90.
Okay.
Like it's super good, but it is a movie where every explanation of it you hear will diminish it. You gotta just watch it. Say yes to nope. Say yope to nope. What? I'm lost. Who am I? Who are you?
Hey everybody, I'm Alan Barber.
And I'm Kirk Klinger.
And we are the hosts of a podcast called You've Never Heard This.
You've Never Heard This?
You've Never Heard This. It's been brought to our attention by the wonderful hosts of the Nighthawks podcast that we use the word new in our promo that they so graciously play on every episode.
And we are not new, Alan.
We are not new. We are no spring chickens.
We're not.
We've been doing this a while.
We've been around. Doesn't mean we know what we're doing.
No, not at all. But we certainly like to pretend.
We try.
If you love music, then you'll love this podcast. It's like a book club, except you don't have to do the homework.
Absolutely.
And we hope that you will join us talking about everything from Soundgarden to Billie Eilish to the Dresden Dolls to Korn.
Little of everything, really.
Little bit of everything.
We have fun.
We have fun. We have a good time. So we hope that you will join us. Enjoy our podcast. We can be found on just about every platform you can think of. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, most recently, Amazon Music and Audible.
Nice.
You have no excuse to not find us.
Yes. So you've never heard us.
Every Tuesday.
So check out
the podcast.
You've never heard this.
Well, one of the other movies I caught at the theater, this was another Alamo Drafthouse run while I was in Denver. I caught Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. This is a new one. And it's kind of a later attempt at playing around with some of the slasher tropes that have, appeared in Hollywood cinema over the last 40, 50 years. You know, I've seen a few horror movies kind of attempt to hit back at the social media, class privilege, rich kids set. And I've seen a lot of these movies over the last 1-2 years. And I think Bodies, Bodies, Bodies does it as well as any of them and is probably a really good example of this. But it is rich people going to a party and everything going absolutely wrong and their privilege and their expectations are what is being skewered. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I was able to kind of get out ahead of the ending fairly early on, but the ride was still really fun. I also realized while watching this that I actually have nothing against Pete Holmes, except for how much he is in my feed for his personal sex life. The guy as a performer is fine. And it was another star turn for Maria Bakalova, who we've discussed on the show, was nominated for an Oscar for her role in the Borat sequel. I had a lot of fun. It was a horror.
You don't have to be nervous. I'm not nervous.
Wow, how so impressive.
You're impressive. They're going to be obsessed with you.
They're not as nihilistic as they look on the internet.
You guys, this is me.
Oh, whoa.
This is your first relationship?
Oh, no.
You just kind of give that vibe.
Oh, you know that has weed in there, right?
Silence!
Oh, stop.
Who wants to play Bodies, Bodies, Bodies?
So how do you play?
If you draw the piece of paper that has the X on it,
you are the murderer.
Let's go. And if you're the murderer, you have to kill someone by touching them on the back.
The most important part, if you come across a body, you have to yell,
body, body, body! Wow.
Is that the lights? David? Our friend is dead.
Someone is doing this. You're trying to kill us off one by one.
That would be so obvious if I were the killer.
Taking off my clothes in the window for the neighbor.
Where are you?
Hot girl.
All
long have you known her?
What are you talking about?
Jordan, what are you doing?
I'm staying safe.
Really? Because it looks like you're grabbing a meat cleaver to go look for my boyfriend.
You should watch your girl.
You pushed her! Liar!
You just want to be me.
What is happening?
Oh, God. That all you got, mother?
I brought something.
What is it?
It's zucchini bread.
Yum.
I'm a hot girl, pop girl, rich girl, I'm a girl, fast girl, catch me if you can go.
I had a lot of fun. It was a horror movie. I got to watch it at an Alamo Draft House. It was pretty good. I don't think this is the one that I'm going to tell people, drop what you're doing and see this now. I'm not going to say it's a new Halloween classic for the season. But if you're just looking for a fun way to watch a bunch of preppy rich people die over a weekend during a hurricane, this movie delivers in that regard. And I had a good time at the movies. Matt, did you see this one?
No.
You didn't? There was a movie that came out that Matt and I did a review on, One of Us. It was called The Seed, which was another one where the characters were really beautiful, really affluent, Instagram influencers, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And in that one, if you want to go listen to our The Seed movie review, you can find that over at oneofus.net. But we kind of talked about how it was such a pain in the ass because their dialogue was so tropey and it was so just out of the character archetype tropey sayings catalog. And this manages to avoid all of that. And in the moments where it does evoke a line that could be considered a trope or a proverb or you know, just a figure of speech for the time, it's deployed well. And so having several recent examples of this pop up, another one that I watched recently was Student Body, which was a slasher movie among a bunch of private high school students. And it didn't quite catch for me. The writing, the dialogue was a little stilted. This one felt real. These characters felt real enough that I bought in. I enjoyed the movie. And at the end of the day, I'd give it a middling review. I'd say it's probably about a 6.5 or a 7 out of 10. But as far as how it stacks up against a lot of the other movies that have played in the same themes, I think it's probably superior.
Did you watch the recent Texas Chainsaw?
I did. What did you think of that?
I thought it lived in that kids and their phones thing a little too much.
Yeah, that's another good example of one that I've seen recently.
So Harlow is a ghost town.
We have a vision for this place. All it needs is young blood.
I don't want to live here. This is a chance for people to start fresh somewhere. Somewhere safe.
Hey, guys. You should see this.
What are you doing in our house?
You really shouldn't be here.
This is Hardesty.
Sally, I'm afraid your old friend's back.
50 years I've been waiting for this night. Just to see him again.
Who?
Leatherface. Like it's you that he wants.
I'm not gonna let him kill you. Fear no evil. Fear no evil.
Try anything and you cancel, bro.
Oh, fuck. What I will say about the Texas Chainsaw, the most recent Texas Chainsaw sequel, which is again starting the franchise as a direct sequel to the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie. As a Texas Chainsaw sequel goes, it's not as good as 2, but it's better than many of the other ones that have come out since 2. And so it worked on that level. I got to see a guy with a chainsaw murder a bunch of people. But there are some really ridiculous setups here that I didn't... The whole setup is that a group of millennials is going out to this dead Texas town that is basically under foreclosure to auction it off to a bunch of hipsters at rock bottom prices so they can live in their perfect little hipster commune of avocado toast and cinemas and boutiques. Is that a real thing? Are there roving groups of millennials with, like, disposable incomes looking to buy conservative Texas towns out in the middle of nowhere and live in perfect communes? Is this a real thing? And how do I get involved?
Well, I think that's part of what threw me about it is I think it's supposed to be some platonic distance out in Mesquite country where they can sort of take over and gentrify but still drive to Austin. I had a lot of thoughts on that one. It was just kind of a mess, but I like the Leatherface take. I like the practical kills in it. It just had some plot holes and some tonal things that just sunk it. Like, it's fine, but you could just watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 instead. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 has Dennis Hopper and he has chainsaw holsters.
Well, since we're on a theme, I actually, Matt, we've talked about on the show ad nauseum, I probably shouldn't even bring it up anymore, that I have kind of a troubled relationship with Dracula as a property. And we've reviewed several Dracula movies on the show. We did Monster Squad, which has a strong Dracula presence. We did Waxwork, that was a double feature episode, which has a minimal Dracula presence. We talked about The Horror of Dracula, the first turn of Christopher Lee in the Dracula role. We talked about that way in the early days of the podcast. And we've also talked about Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Francis Ford Coppola movie from, I think it was 1991 or 92. And during all of those episodes, I say, when I sit down to read the book by Bram Stoker of Dracula, it's just not my favorite story. There's problems with it. It's archaic. The pacing is weird. It's a book from a different time. It just doesn't click with me. It's not that it's a bad book. It's just not for me. And a lot of the quote-unquote more faithful adaptations of Dracula, for me, suffer from the same problems. And so when we covered The Horror of Dracula way back when, 5 years ago now, 6 years ago now, I really gravitated towards that one. I'm like, oh, this was the Dracula movie that followed the story of the book, but had a lot of the boring parts cut out, and a lot of the changes served the story and made it a better, more appealing story for the screen. And so I decided I was going to do a deep dive on this, and I can now say, Matt, as of this year, this coming Halloween, I have seen all of the Hammer Dracula films that feature either Christopher Lee or Peter Cushing or both. And it's a series of diminishing returns, although after a while, they dial up on some of the exploitative material, and that keeps it fun. But we have The Horror of Dracula. That was the first one. That came out in, I think, 58. Then there was The Brides of Dracula. That was Peter Cushing only. No Dracula in that film. It was about his son and brides. Then we brought Lee and Cushing back for Dracula Prince of Darkness, which is weirdly the movie out of this list that was one of the hardest to find. It was on physical media only, so I had to buy a Blu-ray to catch that one. Then Christopher Lee hit on a jag of movies just by himself with no Peter Cushing. We had Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, Taste the Blood of Dracula, and The Scars of Dracula, which is really more of the same period Dracula films, each one dialing up on kind of the violence and the scares and the blood and some of the sexuality. Finally, we get to Dracula AD 1972, which is bringing Cushing back as the grandson of Dr. Van Helsing. I can't remember what his actual first name is in this series. And so we have Lee and Cushing in that one. We have them return for the Satanic Rites of Dracula. And then the capper on it, which is a Cushing-only movie, is Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, also known as The Seven Brothers Meet Dracula. That is a kung fu vampire film with some hasty Peter Cushing added and some Dracula body swapping with a Chinese monk.
Black belt against black magic in the greatest battle of all time. As the seven brothers and their one sister meet Dracula. Drink the blood of the virgins and turn them into zombies. You haven't seen Kung Fu until you've seen the seven brothers and their one sister in action against Dracula.
Bizarre. Probably the worst of the series, but definitely not worth skipping because it is absolutely bonkers bug nuts.
It's a lot of Dracula, man.
So I have learned this is my lesson from Dracula. Are you ready, Matt? This is what I'm taking away from Hammer Dracula.
Lay it on me.
It is really easy to bring Dracula back from the grave. In fact, it's almost too easy because they do it by accident several times.
Wait a minute, is Jason a Dracula?
Interesting. I always thought he was more of a Frankenstein, because the thing that brings him back from the grave was a strike of lightning, I think in part six, seven, six.
Oh, he's easy to revive, but he doesn't drink blood. Is he a Drakenstein? A Frankula?
I think I might like Frankula better.
What do you get if a mad science person stitches together a Frankenstein out of Dracula's? I think I'm gonna make that the villain when I write my urban fantasy series about a chronically depressed unicorn detective.
I like it.
I never told you this idea. This is a real idea.
Oh no.
Right?
Do you want to talk about it on the show and give up your copyright?
No, well, it'll make my copyright because I'll have talked about
it. Oh, I see. Okay, folks, ladies and gentlemen, here on this informal episode is the formal announcement of IP.
I'm mailing it to myself here and forthwith. But like, so you know, like unicorns classically are a fey creature. And so you have one of those urban fantasy settings like Harry Dresden or whatever, except our detective is a unicorn and he can just use his powers to take human form. And the great thing traditionally associated with unicorns is that they can detect innocence and virtue. You know, that's where the whole like you got to get a virgin to catch a unicorn thing comes from, right? And so it's like, my name's Uni K. Orn. I'm a detective in a naked city. My powers let me see innocence. My powers let me see decency. And in this city, my powers don't let me see shit. And he's just like super depressed and always drunk on scotch because he goes out in Gotham City and sees nothing good in anybody ever. He only detects gradations of sin.
But yeah, I think that's going to wrap things up here at the Nighthawks Diner. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and find us on NighthawksPodcast.com. Matt, do you want to send us out?
You should probably go to bed because it is almost morning.
Geeks, nerds, devotees of all worlds, lend me your ears. A community of inclusion and passion awaits you at oneofus.net. Movie and music reviews, debates on books and beer, deep dives into comics and games. There's something for everyone because everyone loves something. Podcast posts daily with subscriptions. You get video content as well. All are welcome because in this world of fandom and fanaticism, all of us are in this together. Your love of pop culture and entertainment makes you one of us already. So join us today at oneofus.net.